Here's a secret. If you like this episode, you can get show notes, sometimes even transcripts of it. Just go to recovergirlnewsletter.com and sign up.
I wouldn't say we fell in love right away. I think we were, as they call it in the biz, trauma bonding.
And then after 8 years of being insufferably sober, I started drinking again.
Addicts tend to be rather sensitive people.
Aren't you Mark Maron? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, what happened to you?
Hey, you guys, Anna David here. You may have noticed something, different theme song. That's because this podcast has been renamed. Yes, After Party Pod is no longer. We are now Recover Girl. Now, I know that not everybody is comfortable with change. Change is inevitable, as the Buddhists say, or they say something like that. But anyway, if you're new, this is a podcast all about addiction and recovery. I am your host, Anna David. I've interviewed hundreds of addicts and alcoholics about their sobriety and their recovery and their addiction and all of those things. And I'm just going to continue to do that here under a new name and a new theme song, which I hope you liked, and a new website, which is recovergirl.biz. And this episode, it's an interview I've been holding on to for a while because I wanted to release it when I was making the big change. This guest needs no introduction, so I'm going to keep it very brief. It's Jemima Kirk. Yeah, it's Jessa from Girls. What can I say except that this was a complete thrill to get her to agree to be in this podcast, to be on this podcast. The sound quality isn't as good as it normally is because we were on her roof. And it just doesn't sound as good, but her voice is so gorgeous. I mean, who really cares? But in case you do need an introduction, shame on you. But she made her debut in the film Tiny Furniture, which was Lena Dunham's original first piece of work out there. Jemima is British and fabulous and lives in New York and is also an artist. She actually received her degree in painting from RISD. And she's pretty fabulous. So let's just have me stop talking and get into Jemima Kirk. So yeah, we're going to launch right into basically your story with you know, drinking and using. And I know you went to rehab young.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that. You grew up here in Brooklyn.
I grew up actually in
England.
In England and then in the West Village.
Okay.
And then I went to school in Brooklyn. But no, I went to a few rehabs, but I would say, I don't know, young is relative, but you know, some people are going to rehabs at like 17 now. But I wasn't 17. I was 23 when I went.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It was.
Yeah. I have a lot of sober friends who never got to go to rehab, you know, and I was like, it was fun.
Well, it's funny because I feel like tons of people think it's going to literally be like a spa and that...
Well, it's not that.
No. Where did you go?
I went to the Meadows.
Oh, yeah. I went there for a week.
That was the most spa-like.
It was.
I mean, you still had to make your own bed and stuff like that, but it wasn't spa-like. It was just nice.
Yeah.
Then I went to Light Life Skills.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Very... Beautiful title. It's such a terrible name. Life skills.
Did you learn any life skills there?
No. I really don't think it was the right fit for me. It was a dual diagnosis place.
Yeah.
My dual diagnosis was like addiction and depression. I was like, they don't go together.
but they do.
Yeah, I know.
What addict doesn't sort of
right.
What person I'm, using drugs.
I wouldn't be here otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I thought I was a bit, I was felt like the healthiest person in there.
Right.
The sanest person in there. But it was called Life Skills because it was supposed to be like a second step program.
Uh-huh.
So you go to the rehab and then you go to this place.
Yep.
And it, and they teach you how to, you know, acclimate to the world like a normal person.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not that deep.
Right.
Like, I know how to, like, I'm not, I know basic things. I know how to do groceries. They teach you how to do groceries.
And make your bed.
And make my bed. I know how to, like, have a schedule.
Right.
I don't want to, but I know how. And but there was some, you know what, I do remember specifically one time that we went to the grocery store and they would always give you $60. That's it for your week.
Right.
And you had to live on that. And coming from a family where I grew up quite privileged.
Yeah.
It was a good, really good lesson because I'm just used to like throwing whatever I want on there. So regardless of any addiction or whatever, I would have had that problem anyway.
Right. So you did learn a life skill.
I did learn a life skill. Of, like I was actually looking at prices and I was actually, I mean, it was, and I had the embarrassment of having to put things back.
Right.
You know, so.
So did you go there after Meadows?
After Meadows. And what I noticed about that one I hated at the time, but I didn't hate it at nearly as much as the next one I went to.
Okay.
Which I would love to bash them because they're awful. Is
Wait. Don't tell me the name until
Why?
We're done. Well, because
they need to be
okay. Okay, you can whisper it to me. But it was bad. Was it one of these?
I won't say the name. It's the name of. I'll just say it's a flower.
Okay.
Which that's the clue. It was an all women's rehab, and there was so much shaming in there.
Yeah.
It was shocking. Even me, who was and is, but even more so then, so self-hating, I was like, oh, you can't say that to me.
Right.
Like that you're poison, that you are, that you're dirty, like really hurtful things. And then, you know, you have your single therapist, you know, you have your group therapy and then you have your one-on-one, yep. Right? And even in that supposed to feel like a safe place, and it did for the first couple of weeks, and then they'd start using that stuff against you. Well, I got sent essentially to the principal's office like every other day, and my therapist would be sitting in there accusing me of things that I had confided.
Yeah. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it was also the worst part of it. So I remember one instance in a group session where we'd been to the beach and we were processing the next day, and someone raised their hand and they said that I made them uncomfortable because I had changed on the beach. Like my friend put a sarong around me, but maybe the sarong slipped or whatever, and they said that would make them uncomfortable. I also told one of the girls that I thought she was super like pretty, or I maybe even said a hot, but it was supposed to be a compliment, and I think it was like it wasn't uncalled for. It was in response to something. And they said that I was too overtly sexual and made them uncomfortable.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, this really is besides the point for me. And I can't look after your feelings. I'm sorry.
But yeah.
Like, my presence on the beach was so
triggering or whatever. Triggering. It was.
But yes. And, so there was that. And then why did I got kicked out of that one. I'm trying to remember. I got kicked out of life skills too, but I'm trying to remember why I got kicked out of that one. I can't remember why, but they remember they called me in to the office and they said, do you want to be here? I'm like, no, I don't want to be here.
Wouldn't anybody say
like,
that?
My mom wants me to be here.
Right.
And then I remember I started crying about something. I can't remember, but something about the way they treat me in there. And then my therapist, who's sitting in with the, let's call her the principal. I don't know what the fuck it was.
Head of whatever.
Was sitting in, and she's like, always the victim, Jemima. And I was like, you can't say that. It might be true.
Right.
But you can't. Anyway, it was an awful, awful place.
Well, you know, Meadows, I felt like was really, you know, when you were there, did people have to wear signs saying?
I wore a sign,
that says, I can't talk to men.
That was what I wore, yeah.
And then there was this pool that was really nice, but you could never go in it because you weren't allowed to wear anything but super like long pants and long shirts.
Yes. And there's so many, you know, because I was so ready to pick apart the whole system.
Right.
I did find a lot of inconsistencies, and there are.
Yeah.
You know, like there are, they ban certain things and not others. You know, they don't allow hairspray in there, but they allow knives in the kitchen that is your kitchen. So they don't allow smoking, but they give them fucking cake.
Yeah,
you know, sugar.
Yeah.
It's so I don't really, So I would always be questioning. And what I would have liked was to have someone talk to me like I was a person, not a patient.
Yeah.
And I always felt like I was being put in my place.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm an adult. I don't need to be put in my place here. I don't need to be broken down so you can build me back up. Like, that's not going to work for me.
Yeah.
I need you to level with me. But it felt like school sometimes.
Yeah.
The fun part was the people.
Yeah.
Was the other patients. The other,
right. Clients, let's call them.
Yeah.
And are you still friends with some of them?
Oh, no. God, no.
Right. But you guys would have fun.
I mean, I'm married to one of them.
I know. Which one did you meet him at?
Life Skills.
Life Skills. Okay. So before you got kicked out, you fell in love or whatever it was at a dramatic moment.
Yeah. I wouldn't say we fell in love right away. I think we were, as they call it in the biz, trauma bonding.
Right, right. Which, yes. So
I think that we were fully 13th stepping it.
You know,
we were just like, you're sick, I'm sick, I get you. Like,
let's escape our feelings.
Yeah. And like, I'm reacting against my whole life and you're reacting too. Let's react with each other.
Right.
And that did happen, and everyone told us this is a terrible, terrible idea, and it was.
Yeah.
And it did have, it was bumpy.
Yeah.
And I can't say why it had such longevity, but it something worked.
So, and it's been about, what, over 10 years or?
Eight.
8 years. So you get kicked out. So you started with Meadows, and then did you get sober and then not stay sober?
No, I went door to door.
Okay.
So Meadows sent me there because, sent me to Life Skills because, you know, they always have to
are in cahoots with each other.
Yeah, something. I don't know. But that was like, they're like, we don't do this for everyone. We just recommend it to the people. I'm like, really? I feel like you do it for everyone.
Yeah.
So I went to Life Skills and got kicked out of Life Skills and had to go.
To the one that shall remain nameless until we stop recording.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I did Survivors, you know, your third week at Meadows.
Oh, I did that too, yeah.
You have to when you're inpatient. I was 5 years sober and I went there and they told me I had to check in. I was 5 years sober.
Right.
I had to check in to Meadows. And I remember going, I don't have like 40 grand to do this. And I remember the counselor going, you can't afford not to. I mean, they are definitely interested in taking your money sometimes.
Yeah. It's a business.
Yeah.
It is a business. It's just the... maybe it's just me, but I don't like when things aren't explained to me mm-hmm. because that's the way it is.
Yep.
That's when I feel like a child or a patient or something. And I had a lot of questions, some of them petulant,
mm-hmm.
but I still, if someone had read me well enough, they would have left with me.
Right.
And maybe said like, we get it. We can't be fucking perfect.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But you just need to take the good with the bad right now.
Yeah.
Roll with this. You know, you checked in. It's a lot of money. Just, we have rules.
Yeah.
You know,
just follow them in your life. It's going to be easier.
Part of the, it's only a few weeks.
Yeah.
And if they'd said that, or if they'd just simply answer my question, well, if we didn't allow smoking, because some places allow smoking.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, why do you allow smoking? And he's like, well, because then the truth is no one would come.
Yeah.
Okay. So there were things I just didn't like when they were like, you're not trusting the process.
Right. So what made you, your mom send you in the first place?
I just was a problem drinker and user. And I liked to party.
Yeah, I hear you.
It didn't look the way a lot of other people's look. So I didn't use during the day necessarily. I just went hard.
Yep.
When I went.
When you did it.
And would go do a lot of, you know, 2 days, 3 day benders, whatever. And that was like a party. That was like normal.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time to come back from a 3 day bender, and then you've lost a week of your life. You know, it's just,
yeah.
But the one moment that took me, that sealed my coffin where I had to go to rehab was when I think I'd done a, you know, pulled an all-nighter or two maybe, and I came home to my mom's house. I was living in the East Village, and I came home to my mom's house, and I was like, I can't do it anymore. I'm so... And what I realized now, I was just so tired.
And coming down.
And coming down. And she was like, yes, like, thank you. Like, you of course, darling. Yes, we'll go. We'll check you in. And then I had a... And then I was like, great, I'm just going to go home for a few hours and then I'll be right. She's like, uh-uh.
Yeah. I've seen intervention. You got to get them like right then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, I know. And then I remember I slept at her house and the next day when I woke up, I was like, I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need to do
overreaction,
this.
Mom.
Yeah. I learned a lot about myself in rehab, and the Meadows, I think, explains things so well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of terminology. It's a lot of diagrams and graphs and charts, right, and whatever. And that was helpful to me. I've done a lot of been in therapy since I was 5, but it was always cognitive therapy. And right, so to see it just sort of drawn out is, it's helpful. I don't stick by those things, love avoidant, love addict, you know, whatever it is. I don't think of those things on a daily basis, but at that moment when I really had nothing to ground myself in what was going on in me, that information was nice.
Are you still in therapy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you really go at 5 and stick with it? Like, we're talking 6, 7, 8, 9?
My whole life.
And you basically played like checkers or whatever you do,
yeah,
when you're 5
years
old?
Yeah, they like watch you play, or they ask you to draw a picture of your home, draw a picture of your family. Yeah.
And I know this sounds ridiculous, but, you know, people suffering from self-hatred, even if on the outside it looks like they have everything and all of that,
it has nothing to do with anything. It's just all about whatever. It's about beliefs.
Right.
What you believe about yourself and the world, and really has nothing to do with what you've achieved or how talented you are or how good looking you are. Like, obviously it has nothing to do with those things. It's whatever messages you were given as a child,
yeah,
about the world and about how people see you and how, what your value is, that's going to carry over no matter what you know, achieve in your life. As long as you don't somehow change those beliefs, and that's a fucking hard thing to do, then you'll be that way forever. And I'm working on it.
Right.
I'm just working
right
on it. And
right,
it never goes away. These things that you're taught about yourself, and about the world. They, it never goes away, but you learn to recognize that it's a voice.
Yeah. And, you know, a friend of mine says it's like life is about getting comfortable with discomfort.
Yes.
And calling it discomfort rather than depression.
Right.
Or whatever it is makes it pass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my experience.
My therapist would always say to me, you're really bad at being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Like, that's you? That's it? That's what I am? I'm just bad at being uncomfortable?
Right. So simple.
So simple, and also makes me feel like it's such a dick.
Right.
But no, he also said this recently, which is really huge for me. And he said, you'll never get hurt by being in pain. You'll only get hurt by trying not to be. And I was like, well, but like, pain hurts. So what are you talking about? And he's like, well, pain's a given.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And to resist it is when we destroy ourselves, instead of going into it, which I've almost never done.
Going into it?
Just like been like, except, wow, that hurts real bad. I'm just going to sit here and look at it. You know, I'm always like, okay,
like,
where can
any
I go next?
Destruction, yeah.
We got to get out of here. How do we get out of here?
I know. I mean, it's the human condition to want to avoid pain.
It's
and
survival,
yet,
yeah.
Yeah, but I get it. It's such a struggle. And it's like, just because the thing is, it does pass. You know,
yeah.
I just read this book and it says a feeling lasts in your body for a minute and a half.
Oh, wow.
So if you are, if like sadness.
And then what is it after that?
A
when
choice.
It's gone?
Supposedly a choice to hang on to it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, knowing that doesn't, you know, make all the difference knowing in the world.
And everything makes, you know, it's so funny. I because I've been in therapy so much, like self-awareness, I'm like, I got it.
Yeah, I know. There's such a thing as too much, don't you think?
Yeah. I don't know that it works. It's too much because I don't get a blissful break from not knowing what I'm doing.
Right.
I always
know
what I'm doing. You know?
I know. I miss ignorance. I don't know if you ever feel like you had that.
Being like, I'm doing this because I feel like it. No, I'm like, I know why I'm doing it.
And also like believing like, oh, happiness comes from like getting this thing. Like for so long, I believed that. And then you get those things and you're like, what?
I know.
This wasn't the answer.
I know. I have that with Etsy. Oh. I know when I'm like, oh, I'm just going to see what's on Etsy that like something's up.
Right, right.
You know? So back to like addiction.
Yes.
I do, you know, I recognize that I use things as an anesthesia, you know, and that can be anything from shopping to sex to a conversation with that, you know, a sort of, some sort of attention,
right?
You know, drinking, smoking a cigarette,
yeah,
anything. It's an anesthesia. But for me, I didn't. There's so many. I don't even know where to begin. Well, I didn't fully relate to. I related to a lot of the feelings in AA, and but I didn't relate to the sort of the psychic like need for the alcohol or the irresistible urge for it necessarily. Right. I recognize it as a tool.
Yeah.
And I know how to use it as a tool.
Yeah.
I'm not someone who drinks excessively.
Yeah.
But I will drink for a reason sometimes.
Right. If it's an event or something.
Yes. And that just, and I know enough to know that just because you drink doesn't necessarily mean an alcoholic mate. But I don't know. The way I saw it more was that I, especially when I was really out of it, was that I was more of, I had a problem with alcohol and drugs more than I had an addiction.
Right.
It was problem drinking.
Right.
And I think that's possible.
Absolutely.
And then my friend said, my sponsor then said, now friend, who's still sober and amazing, she said something like, and it was very oversimplified and it's not all true, but that a problem drinker is when you stop the drinking and the problem reveals itself and it sort of goes away. Goes away, but it's suddenly dealable.
Yeah.
And then an addict is when it goes away and everything falls to shit.
Right. And you realize the problem is much bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was very oversimplified because I can relate to both.
Yeah.
I can relate to both. You know what? It also goes back to my thing with rules. I'm just not, AA is filled with rules.
Yep.
And I...
Suggestions
sort of that turn into judgments.
Right.
And, you know, sort of... Anyway, it's filled with a lot of rules and I know what my threshold is for having rules, and it's that I will kick back.
Yeah.
That there are suggestions, advice, or a formula.
Yeah,
I will kick back, and I did it for 5 years, but I was always asking questions.
Yeah,
and I was always asking questions. Like I never liked the disease model.
Mm-hmm.
That bothered me. I mean, I know that's a touchy subject. Really, a lot of people believe in it.
Yeah, personally, I've never understood the controversy around it. You know, just stay sober or don't, and however you want to define it is okay.
I don't like that people would call whatever their defects were their alcoholism.
Right.
No, that's you being a dick.
Right.
You know,
right,
and I don't like that it felt too simple for me.
Yeah.
And so I've stopped relating. Everything was too simple.
Yeah.
And for me, when it's too simple, I get like suspicious. And when it's, I prefer it to be complex. Maybe that's just masochistic. up.
No, I mean, I think it's like,
well, because if it's complex, then I feel like a real person.
As opposed to sort of a number.
As opposed to like a number or someone who fits into a mold.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so you decided to drink. Was that, you know, some big mind fuck?
Yeah, well, trying to remember if it... It was, because, you know why? Because I had the voices in my head of like, from AA, that like, once you drink, you can never come back.
Yeah.
And I was, or not never come back. You can come back, but you're out.
Yeah.
Now. And that scared me, because I'd been in it for 5 years. I didn't want to be out. I didn't want to lose the things that AA had given me.
Yeah.
But I also really resented that they were telling me that a drink and drinking would now, I wouldn't have those things anymore. And I know, anyway, so that was scary when I started drinking. I was like, oh God, now I'm on the other side, you know, because they do make it that black and white. But it was fine. It was really, the first year was I was totally like, didn't drink that much. I was so used to not drinking.
Yeah.
That it was kind of like, ooh, I'm just going to have a glass of something, you know, occasionally. And I did. And then there were a couple, like shitty moments where I like, I drank too much and I beat myself up for it. And I'm like, oh my God, I really can't drink. And then I was like, wait, it was my birthday. I got drunk. It happens, you know, and that may have been me rationalizing. But the point was I was just trying to get away from the shoulds and the shouldn'ts and pull myself out of the mold and just be a fucking human.
And you can't argue with the fact that in those years, so it's been about 3 years, you've had amazing success.
Yeah.
Been raising kids.
Yeah, I guess so. But there are a lot of women on the Upper East Side who are addicted to pills, who like have their little boutique business and raise kids.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't know that it has anything to... Okay, so are you saying so I may have gotten that stuff from...
No, I was actually saying that it's, you know, for people out there who go, well, your life will fall apart if you drink... That is not necessarily
the case. No, I don't think that's one of the reasons I don't think I don't feel like an addict.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm scared of it or scared of like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And that doesn't happen anymore. But in the beginning I did. I ask, is my drinking unmanageable? Is my life unmanageable right now? And it's not. When it gets unmanageable, it's got nothing to do with the alcohol right now.
Right.
So, yeah, I know I don't use it I don't use it to sabotage.
Yeah.
So.
Well, good. I think this is a good note to end on. And again, I think this is a really important message, which doesn't mean if you're an alcoholic, like, oh, good, I'll go get to drink and all of that.
No, I mean, the biggest message I will say from this, that I would want people to get from this, is that there is such thing as having a problem.
Yeah.
And not being an addict. You don't have to fit into the mold. You can stop drinking and you don't have to stay stopped drinking, but maybe it's good for right now.
Right.
It's not this, it doesn't have to become your lifestyle if it's not for you.
Right. Yeah.
So, but yeah, there are very practical reasons for not drinking when we need to.
Yeah.
And I have plenty of friends who are like, I'm not drinking at the moment. You know, I was drinking straight for 2 weeks. So I just need to chill. And that they're normal, you know, non-addicted people. But that's just the choice that's just the choice they make, because, you know, alcohol is a tricky thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is a good note to end on. So that was Jemima Kirk on the brand spanking new podcast, Recover Girl. If you want to find out more about this podcast, go to recovergirl.biz. And if you like this podcast, why not review it and rate it? I mean, with the new name, we could use some new support. Thanks. I'll see you next time. Here's a secret.
If you like this episode, you can get show notes, sometimes even transcripts of it. Just go to recovergirlnewsletter.com and sign up.